This is A View from the Bridge, unofficial podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today is Tuesday, the 4th of June, 2013. My name is Patrick Smith. It is a beautiful summer's day. There's not a cloud in the sky. The sun is beaming down here in the city of Manchester. As I was driving home from work, it said it was 24 degrees Celsius. So why am I talking into a microphone in a dark bedroom at the back of my flat? It's because I'm a sad, hockey-obsessed geek. However, it's going to be quite enjoyable what we have for you today. Coming up, we've got an interview with Todd Kelman. But first, we've got the usual suspects. It's June and the sun is shining. There's no hockey to talk about, but I'll talk to these two lads anyway. Davey McGimsey and Neil the Coach Russell. Gentlemen, how are you?
Hey, Paddy.
Well, what can I say? The Nottingham Panthers walked away last season with three major trophies. Not all of the trophies, unfortunately for them, but the three major trophies and winning the playoff final with the Belfast Giants coming back, but the Panthers winning it, unfortunately, in overtime. But drawing a line at the end of last season, as it was, you know, Doug Christensen made the move within 24 hours of the playoff final finishing from the Belfast Giants to the Sheffield Steelers. Moving from one team so unexpectedly to a rival can be soul destroying. Coach?
Yeah.
I ask you specifically.
Very good, Patrick. I think we picked up a bit of a rumour on the Saturday evening in Nottingham to do with Doug and the possibility of him moving to Sheffield. And I think whenever we first picked that up, I think we all kind of thought, pie in the sky, just typical playoff rumour and what have you. But it's obviously borne fruit. And listen, I was highly critical of Doug in the first season that he was with us. I didn't like his style of hockey. I wasn't a huge fan, but, you know, I gained a hell of a lot of respect for him throughout the course of the second season, where he obviously put together a lot more of a physical side. And, you know, I think it will be a miss for us. I liked I liked how methodical he was as a coach. And I liked the fact that he realised the errors of his ways, and he kind of changed things around moving into a second season with the club. It's a good pickup by Sheffield. He's a professional guy, and he's going to do a very good job. And, you know, as he was very quick to point out, he has a massive budget to work with in Sheffield. Obviously, more of a budget than he was ever going to have with Belfast, and that's obviously enticed him to move.
Davey, what's your take on the move? It's not unusual in this game.
It's not unusual, as you say, in this game. In fact, it's not unusual really in any sport. I've got a good friend who would have been in a similar situation over the summer himself. You know, was formerly would have been, you know, one of the leading lights in his chosen sport, and maybe a star was on the wane a bit, and he's managed had to move on. The pastures knew.
That's sad when that happens.
Obviously for more money, but you know, it's sad when people show a lack of loyalty. Yes,
Davey, this is about ice hockey, not cricket. Move on.
But you say that you look at Christensen, he has made a big thing, and it's not just him actually. Tony Smith there, and Dave Sims have all made big comments about how much money has to be spent by the Sheffield Steelers. They're obviously hurting with the fact that Nottingham done so well last season down the road. That, you know, we've seen all the press releases, all the, you know, this happened on our watch and all this sort of nonsense. But Sheffield are obviously stinging, and they've went for Christensen as a replacement, and they're giving him a big budget, and they're looking to be a force to be reckoned with.
But I think, like, from, sorry, David, I think from, like, Sheffield's perspective, you know, I think they've realised the error of their ways over the last pile of years. You know, they've got themselves in a lot of financial difficulties, a lot of ownership problems, and, you know, a lot of instability on the coaching front at various different stages, and, you know, a lot of player discontentment. And, you know, one of the things that I kind of picked up from Doug's first interview the day after the playoffs, when he was announced as the Steelers coach, was, you know, he was looking to transform the club, and it's, you know, right down to, like, player accommodation, looking after the wives and girlfriends that come in, and making sure just that every box is ticked. And that's something that he did and Killer did obviously with Belfast, because we went through a bit of a similar-ish type type thing a few years back as well. And, you know, the club was transformed, and Nottingham have clearly got a very good setup, both on and off the ice. And I think Sheffield have probably realised, you know what, we actually need to up our game here on and off the ice, and they're putting in that investment now. So they are, which I hope it doesn't bear fruit, clearly. But with Doug in charge, I think you know, it could be good times ahead for people in Sheffield.
Davey?
They've picked themselves up a very good coach, as we know. He's very methodical. It's something, obviously, Coach likes very much about him. He said in previous podcasts, you know, it would be something that would be one of his number one legs with Christensen. I wasn't a huge fan of Doug Christensen. I'm not going to try and rewrite history now. I welcome all the success he brought the club, and I wish him personal success. I obviously don't wish him success with his Steelers, but you know, he's a good enough guy. And I think Coach is right in what he's saying there. I think in this league, stability off the ice is crucial. You had the likes of Brayhead over the last number of years. People perennially think they're going to be contenders, and their off-ice instability costs them on the ice. I think if clubs can get themselves settled off the ice, and obviously coaches saying they've learned from their mistakes, they're still throwing money at their problems. They've looked at Nottingham and says, how can we catch them? We'll throw a load of dough at it. We'll just have to, time will tell whether it works or not.
Okay, well then, looking back at the Giants, they're left with a hole to fill, and it's a substantial one at that, because the coaching role is probably is without doubt the most important one to have. We had a number of weeks there when it was a case of who's going to, a lot of names being thrown in the press: Dave Matsos, Dave Whistle, Jason Ruff, Steve Thornton. We've ended up with Paul Eddy. Davey, I'm going to ask you this question. How shocked were you by that?
I wasn't overly shocked, in so much as that Eddie comes with a bit of a reputation. You know, he's coached in Europe. He's at least got a decent CV. I'm not jumping up and down about Paul Eddy for obvious reasons. But at the end of the day, you know, what happened. Paul Eddy, I'll never be a massive fan of, but he's now the coach of my club, and I have to get behind my club and support them. And that's how it's going to go. I'm not going to be his number one fan, but, you know, Todd Kelman reckons we've got the right man for the job. Well, then we'll just have to trust Todd for the time being.
Well, that's it, Coach, isn't it? We've had a couple of weeks, over a month of deliberations. Of, you know, there's the interview coming up with Todd Kelman. He talks about how many, you know, people he got in touch with, and how he looked at the experience that Eddie had. And Eddie now comes in as probably the most experienced coach in the elite league. It's not a dud signing.
Oh, definitely not. You know, listen, Eddie probably had that reputation of putting together that famous Nightcar, Clark, Scott Allison, Christian Tauber team.
Sharon, Dodie Wood.
Literally was an endless bunch of very tough physical hockey players who obviously went a wee bit over the edge one night at the Odyssey, which the three of us and many other Giants fans will never forget. And Eddie being the head coach of that team, people like Davey struggles to forgive and forget, and so do I to a certain extent as well.
There as well.
Yeah, and so am I. Probably, maybe not as much, but you know, with regards to Eddie, he's gone into over to Italy and coached, and has done well over there. I think it's a good pickup for us. He's going to have coached a lot of very good players. He's going to have built up his contact portfolio, for want of a better term, and you know, I think he'll put together a good team. You know, my one criticism, which I've already kind of touched on with Christensen, was, you know, he was defense first and attack second. Well, you know, I think all of us kind of course we want our team to win whenever we go and pay our money to walk into the Odyssey Arena, but at the end of the day, we also want to be entertained. That's what people are paying money for. And I think at times Doug did kind of play a bit of a bland defensive type hockey. That won't be the case with Eddie. You know, I dare say we could be sitting here on podcasts in January kind of saying, I'd love us to sign an out-and-out D-man and things like that, you know, shut down D-man because we're probably playing too offensively. You know, fans are probably never happy unless they're top of the league. But I think Eddie will come in and do very, very well for us. And I think he'll put together a good squad. And we've already, I'm sure you'll touch on, we've already got, the composition. We've got the best players back from last year.
Well, that's it. Let's move on to that, because when Eddie came in, there were we already had signed Jeff Mason, Robbie Sandrock, David Phillips, Kevin Phillips, Mark Garside, Colin Shields, Adam Keefe, Darrell Lloyd. That's the guts of a team. He's coming in here with a lot of, like you say, a lot of the players already. Okay, now he's brought in Calvin Elfring and the return of Kevin Surrett, which I know the coach is happy about. But he's coming in and he's going to have to work with a team that are already starting to take shape. Now, that happens in sports. It happens in football. It happens in cricket. It happens in most sports where a coach has to come in and make do with what he's got. But in ice hockey, it's kind of unusual because you're allowed to usually build your own team. Do you think you'll find that difficult, or do you think we've got the right players?
I think probably if you take the import side aside for a second, the core of British players that Todd Kelman, I suppose, was ultimately responsible for re-signing are a good core of players. There's no doubt about it. You know, they've got pedigree. We're probably missing that one, perhaps, like a Matt Toe type player that can come in and do a job, maybe get on the power play, build his ice time up through the season. But I think we've got as good a squad of British talent there as anyone in the league. You look at the imports that he's been given, Adam Keefe and Darrell Lloyd. Any coach in the league would do somersaults to have them in their roster, so I don't think he'd complain about that. And his pickup of Elfring and Kevin Surrett are two great signings. It'd be interesting to see what we do going forward defensively. We've now signed 5 D-men, 3 imports and Dave Phillips, who's always been sort of mooted as import quality. And we're always saying, you know, we really need to go with 4 import D, but as coaches already said there as well, that's a very attacking D core. And take Elfring out of it, they're all right-handers as well. There's only one left-hand shoot on that D at the minute, so I still think there'll be another D-man to come in here.
Coach, look at...
Which leaves Kevin Phillips' place in the whole scheme of things as a bit of a question mark. You know, if we do bring another D-man in, what's Kevin Phillips really bringing to the party?
Kevin Phillips returning to the team after a few seasons were in Brayhead, where he initially flattered to deceive, but sort of became stronger as, I think, last season went on. I thought he was actually playing pretty well last season. But I do see what you're saying, Davey. I think that a player like Phillips might end up not surplus to requirement, but we look at where Graham Walton was last season, trying to get a regular D spot as probably considered the last British D-man. Will Kevin Phillips fall into that if we start to bolster that defence?
Are you asking me that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's going to potentially struggle for ice time. Just on the fact that to win this league now, we know what the formula is you need. You need big D-men, you need stay-at-home D-men, and you need crease-clearing D-men. And so far, what we have signed up there, we don't have it. So you would imagine there's another piece of the puzzle to come in yet, and that sort of leaves Kevin Phillips, and a player who I actually rate quite highly. I wouldn't have minded if he had actually stayed the last time he left Belfast. You know, I think at this stage of the season, to be looking at a D-man and thinking you're not going to get much ice time, he must be looking at that picture as well.
Coach, one of the big movements that's happened with the Belfast Giants is actually the unfortunate fact that Craig Peacock has moved on. He's joined the Friedrichsen Whitehawks in Denmark after 4 seasons of the Belfast Giants. When we lost Robert Dowd, we thought, you know, who's going to step into this role? And Peacock is probably one of the top, no, without doubt, one of the top offensive forwards in the league, and in British forwards. And we now look to see who's going to replace him, I think, is one of the big things at the minute.
Big time, you know, Peacock's going to be a massive miss. I did comment on a couple of the podcasts that I did feel that Peacock, and I don't know the stats off the top of my head, what he ended up with. He was still a key component within our team, but I did feel last season he just wasn't as prolific as he was in his previous few years with the club. I don't know why that was. Don't know whether it was the style of hockey that Doug introduced, or maybe the new players that came in, he maybe wasn't as formative a player, maybe just had one of those seasons where he just didn't kind of stand out like he had done in the previous few years. But like, he is going to be that's going to be a big hole. Whenever you put somebody like Peacock out of your team, it's a big, big hole. It's going to be very, very difficult to replace. Like, let's be honest, who are we going to replace him with? You know, the top-end Brits are already signed up, albeit some would argue we already have the likes of Davey Phillips and Colin Shields, but, you know, the likes of the other guys that I would regard as the top-end Brits, you know, David Clark, Rob Dowd, all those boys are all signed up. I suppose the one anomaly and all that is obviously Ashley Tate, and I think there's...
Coach?
Coach has fell down the loo.
Coach has gone, yeah. Vanished.
He was talking shade anyway.
17 of it. Where's he gone?
He can probably
Hello?
Hear us.
Hello, we can hear us. Are you back?
I never left.
There you go. Yeah, this happens back. Every podcast. I never went away, you know.
No.
I was in full flow there.
Are you wearing full flow?
I know, as I said, the party were talking some shit. Like,
fuck's sake. Right.
Make a closing comment, then I'll cut it in.
We want Ashley Tate.
So, but you're saying the anomaly is Ashley Tate.
Yeah, the anomaly and all that is obviously Ashley Tate. And there's obviously a bit of to and fro going on there between Nottingham and ourselves. And it would be a good pickup. I know Tate's coming towards the end of his career, but it would still be a damn good pickup for ourselves if we were to try and bring Tate in to replace Peacock, albeit slightly different players. But be a good one to get the hold of.
Listen, Ashley Tate would be an absolutely fantastic addition to our roster. You know, he's a player that over his career has averaged over a point a game, and he's going to bring up the Belfast as well. Ashley Tate's on the ice. You've scored a goal every game you've played, so, you know, other teams playing catch up straight away.
Okay, but then these are an established British player, a British player who has been around for, you know, over 10 years. Peacock came to Belfast from Peterborough as a relative unknown elite league standard player who was ripping it up in the EPL. The interview you'll hear from Todd Kelman, he states about Peacock that within a couple of days of signing him, he gets a phone call from Paul Thompson berating him because Tom wanted it himself. Do the Giants? That was probably one instance where the Giants, you know, stole a march on other teams. But surely, Davey, the Giants suffer for the fact that they're not as close to EPL or ENL squads as many of the other ones are, and they don't have the opportunity to pick up the likes. If you look at Tom Norton's come in from return to the Panthers from Peterborough, there are guys like Tom Duggan who's just went from Phoenix to the Guildford Flames who could probably take a step up to the league, but the Giants aren't in there amongst it.
It's interesting. It was Steve Thornton, wasn't it, that went and scouted
it was.
Peacock and brought him over. I just don't know whether Paul Eady is that type of guy that he's going to go down and scout EPL players. Or the problem with our junior system in Northern Ireland, I suppose, is that the junior Giants and that such like are playing in Scottish leagues, which aren't potentially all that competitive. You're right in what you're saying. There's young guys that are in the elite or in the EPL that could step up to the elite league. It's just about giving them a chance, and whether or not coming over to Northern Ireland is too much of an expense for the club and too much of a step for those kids.
But the thing about that as well is the monetary side of things. You know, you look at the likes of Matt Toe. Matt Toe has come over to Belfast to play in the Premier League of ice hockey, the elite league, and he's now going to Swindon for next season. And you can bet your bottom dollar he's on more money at Swindon because he'll be a formative player on that team, whereas he was a bit part player on the Belfast team. He was kind of, oh, we'll throw him out for the odd shift here and there, albeit he actually did okay towards the end of the season. And as we commented on, and Mr. Kelman also commented on from memory, he was on our power play at the, you know, in the double header against Nottingham, you know, so he obviously impressed Christensen enough to kind of get onto the power play. But I think it's a monetary thing there as well with regards to these guys moving up to the elite league.
I have to say, I was surprised at Matt Toe going to Swindon. Swindon seemed to be loading it up at the minute. They've brought in Stevie Lyle. They got rid of Aaron Nels went from Swindon to Sheffield, and they brought in Matt Toe. But I think players like that could still do a job at elite league level, because Matt Toe was doing a job at Guildford before he came to us. I think it's very interesting the way that the teams can basically exchange like that, or players can move down like that. And I don't know whether it's a case that Matt just was, it was a case of he wanted to be, you know, he got more money at Swindon, or he wanted to have a more ice time and be a formative player or not. But it is quite interesting the way that's worked. Looking at the other teams bounding on here, lads, the one of the big bits of news, we spoke a lot in the last few podcasts about Ran Finnerty's position at the Sheffield Steelers and how safe it was, and how, and of course Tony Smith got rid of him, and all the stuff that went on behind the scenes there, and Ran Finnerty was out of work. And then a couple of weeks after the season ended, in comes Finnerty at Brayhead. Neil Black picks him up and sticks him in at Brayhead. He's arrived there, he's brought with him Chris Frank, and he's signed Shane Lusk and a couple other guys in. Finnerty at Brayhead, is that a danger to every other team, coach?
Blah, blah, blah. Finnerty divides opinion, not just obviously among his playing staff, but I think among the fan base as well. I loved Finnerty on the ice. I hated him when he played against Belfast, but I loved his tenacity. He was a bit of a Sacratini to me, so he was going back quite a few years to Super League era. You know, he was a niggly, he was a rink rat, and I think he's in some ways struggled to kind of convert from being the player. Everyone loves a wee rink rat on your team, so I think he was obviously a really liked individual whenever he played for the Devils or played for Sheffield. But you know, I think as a coach, he's confrontational, and you know, some people respond well to that, and other people don't. It's an interesting one. I'm really unsure, to be honest with you. I think overall he'll bring in a good squad. I don't think he would have gone to Brayhead without the promise of a fairly healthy budget to work with. And he clearly loves the Elite League and the setup over here, and he clearly wanted to come back. So, yeah, time will tell again on that one. I'm just probably a bit unconvinced with Finnerty as a coach at this stage.
Finnerty will serve a ban for his first couple of games at Brayhead, because after an altercation with the referee in the second leg of the Challenge Cup final. Davey, give us your opinion on Finnerty at Brayhead.
First of all, Brayhead, it really wouldn't be the summer if they weren't getting a new coach. Gardner didn't last.
Season hasn't even started yet, he might go.
Yeah, well, this is true. Gardner's obviously, I think he's gone off to Holland. If he's given a bit of a budget there, he's brought in a few players. He seems to be stacking up with everything he's signed so far is well over 6 foot. So he's obviously, he could put his mark there. And that conference is there to be won by Brayhead season in, season out, really. Good luck to Phil, you know. I don't really have much of an opinion on it.
My main memory of him was getting it absolutely destroyed by Jeff Swayze in the big blue tent after he took a shot on Murphy after the buzzer went. Swayze put him on his back. But
was the best.
Yeah,
I think actually was that the night Jerry Adams stepped in and took the took Finnerty's punches for him.
Yeah, that was that game. The looking across the league, gents, there have been some interesting signings and a lot of not-so-interesting signings. But you look at... there's been a lot of talk the last week or so about Cardiff. They've just announced that their new arena is going to be built. It's a couple of years away. But they've really loaded up. They've brought Matt Myers in from the Nottingham Panthers. They've brought in a guy, Andrew Lord, from the German second... the Bundesliga 2. And the most incredible one for me was Frank Doyle from Fassa in Italy. Frank Doyle, whose statistics were out doing the likes of Rycroft, who only a couple of seasons ago was NHL. A wet paper bag would have been better than Whitley, but Frank Doyle coming in really sets them up, coach.
Yeah, you know, I think I've also touched on this again in previous podcasts, but I can remember in the very first season talking to Mike Blaisdell one time after a game, and the first thing that he said whenever we're just talking hockey, he said whenever he's recruiting a team,
The first thing that he looks at is his goaltender and making sure he gets it, makes sure that he has the best goaltender in the league. And Cardiff have, as you touched on, and we spoke about at the playoffs, like Whitley was dreadful at the playoffs, and I don't think he obviously didn't have a great second half of the season with the Devils. I know he arrived late, but they've definitely recruited well thus far. It'll just be interesting to see. You know, obviously there was a lot of debate last year in Cardiff whenever Bissonnette went back to the NHL, and you know, they didn't bring anybody in, and Reagan was kind of semi-promising that this money would be saved for next season, and it seems to be that way. It seems that they're putting a bit of money behind it, and as an organisation they seem to be becoming a lot more professional again on and off the ice, which is good for the elite league. You know, every club seems to be raising their standards, and that can only be good, and Cardiff are definitely one of them, and they have started their recruitment drive off very, very well thus far.
Davey, Cardiff, like you get to see them a little bit because you're close vicinity to them. They seem to be building.
Just this, to go along with what Coach is saying there about Mike Blaisdell, I think Paul Thompson was also of the same school of thought, that you build around a very good netminder. Yeah. And the guy's stats speak for themselves. He's had a very good career so far. I hope he's not... You hope these players don't sort of come to this and see it as a bit of a year out, a bit of a gap year. You know, if he comes and brings his A game, you know, that's going to put Coventry right up the league. Or, sorry, Cardiff right up the league. But just segueing into that, Coventry have also signed up a hell of a roster so far. If rumours are to be believed, that Tomo's sort of signing the roster up and giving it to Matt, or whether he's signing his own man, he's certainly signed a big roster so far.
And and another one to come by the time this comes out. By the time this podcast comes out, they will know of the signing of Sean Erickson, who comes from Tulsa Oilers, who's seems to be a decent CHL D-man, an offensive one at that. There are quite a few, so we could speak all night about signings of other teams. You know, point out when you look at the teams that are being built, and I'll take this as the last point of the night. You look at the teams that are being built, and you look at who's going in and where. You know, Coach, how do you foresee Eddie putting this team together? What sort of team would you like to see Eddie bring in, considering the players we already have?
Well, yeah, I agree with what Davey said earlier on about the physical D-man. You know, I've gone on record many, many a time about the Nottingham team of last season, and to me it was no rocket science that, if we remember, and isn't it funny that I can remember our first podcast, I think, last season, and we were discussing the Panthers and how they were semi-struggling, and all of a sudden they bring in Guy Lepine, who isn't the world's best hockey player or anything like it, but a big, strong, physical presence, no-nonsense D-man, alongside a Jason Beckett, two big physical guys, alongside an Eric Werner, who was absolutely fantastic, a small, nippy, brilliant skater, great puck-handling D-man. And they complement each other, and I hope Eddie does something similar, because it is something that I feel that we have kind of lacked as a decor. It was definitely something that we lacked last season. You know, I felt that the likes of Colbert, Sam Roberts, were all just much of a muchness. So they were, in terms of size and stature and the way in which they played the game. And I want us to sign a Jason Beckett type guy. You know, we've already got our physical presence up front with Lloyd and Keith. Those guys might not be the tallest guys in the world, but they'll throw themselves about. I would love us to sign somebody along the lines of a Bruce Graham type character. You know, again, we talked about it at the playoffs. Like, such a difference a guy like that makes to a team. You know, his reach is fantastic, his skill level is fantastic, and being that size means you can get into, he's physical, but he's also skillful. Something that's often, I think, underestimated or underrated, whatever way you want to look at it, is the kind of the reach to get the puck, to keep hold of the puck, to keep other players away, creating space for other players. I thought Bruce Graham was absolutely superb at that last year. And he obviously worked alongside the likes of David Ling, who was the best player in the league last year, really, really well. But I would love us to sign a couple of big guys, so we'd to complement what we already have in terms of the smaller, kind of nippier and physical guys.
I agree with you with regards to the likes of Colburn, you know, and Sam Roberts. So I file in maybe of players like that I didn't enjoy watching, but just sort of like disappeared. So like,
yeah, Derek, no identity.
Derek LeBlanc came in, didn't do much, and went. You know, I wasn't a big fan, but you know, it's interesting to see how AD can put it together. Divi, we know that AD can put together physical teams. We've seen it, especially in the past. Do we need that physical edge? Because we've brought back Keith and Lloyd. Do we need any more physicality? Do you think it'll be forefront in his mind, or do you think he's looking to a bit more skillful?
I think the difference, there's a difference has to be drawn between physicality and actual just physical size. I think we need, the game of hockey has evolved, even the NHL. It's no longer, there's no longer any Theo Fleury's about. You know, everyone's 6 foot, 190 pounds plus. It's a game for large individuals now. And that drips down to our level. It's a game that at the top end of our league last year was dominated by Nottingham and their size. On the power play, that you had Ling pulling the strings, and as coaches said, Bruce Graham was immense. The way they could take the zone and just set up, Bruce Graham could just go where he wanted, usually at the top of the circle, and Ling would find him and he'd find the net. You do need those bodies that create the space for other players to play. And I think we need a couple of large gents, and then let the skill guys fill in the blanks.
I think what I'm kind of intimating is, you know, we have the toughness there in Lloyd and Keith, but in terms of the physical prowess along with the skill, you know, in Belfast terms, another Jason Ruff type character, someone who can play the game exceedingly well, can mix it up physically if he needs to, and also like just covers all bases. Again, I suppose my cliched phrase, the X factor player. And to me, Nottingham had five or six genuine X factor players in their team last year, and you know, they have set the gold standard, and we need to match that moving forward next season.
It'd be very, very interesting to see, because consider the experience that he has in Italy, and Italy is, you know, it's got some very, very good players there, to see if he can maybe recruit from there, bring some players with him from his previous teams. But to rebuild a team in the Elite League, having not played or not been part of British hockey for, 10 years, it'd be very interesting to see what his thoughts on how to change the systems, on how to, you know, he'll have watched Nottingham, he'll have watched Sheffield, he'll have seen how they play, he'll know the players that are being part in each. He'll look at Nottingham and how they're putting together their team, and he'll know how, you know, Corey Nielsen's probably going to play the same sort of systems with some minor changes, and he'll already be hopefully be putting together in his mind, you know, how he needs to counteract that and how he can build Belfast into a team. Because, as we said before, gentlemen, Belfast are thankfully a successful franchise. We're a successful team. We're always there and thereabouts. When Coventry have come and gone, we've still been up there fighting. When Sheffield have come and gone, we've still been up there fighting. So the most important thing is that when it comes to next February, March, we're right there at the top. And he needs to build a team that basically that fulfills those expectations.
In AD we trust.
Well, Davey?
Not so much.
Well, thanks very much, gents. It's been short and sweet compared to our usual chats, but there'll be plenty more to talk about, I'm sure, as the months goes on. We'll chat again later in the summer.
Cheers, Patrick.
Cheers, Patrick.
Thanks to the gents as always. We didn't get into a lot of the other things we were hoping to talk about, like, you know, where's Chad Langley, whether he's going to come back to the Giants, what we thought about Rob Dowd going to the Sheffield Steelers. But there is plenty of time to talk about that between now and the start of September, and we'll be back hopefully in a couple of weeks to talk about just that and everything else that's going on. But don't go anywhere, because right now I got a chance to chat with Todd Kelman about it's been a hell of a year for Todd Kelman, considering all that's went on. Everybody knows the story, so we're not going to get in depth into that. But I began by asking him, given the hardships of last season and the team showed great character, how did he feel that they achieved?
Yeah, I mean, losing the way we did in the playoff final game, though, was a bit disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anyone watching the game live or on TV probably was, as I was, wondering how we could get that many penalties in the last, you know, 5 minutes or 10 minutes of a game and then into overtime. It was, it was tough to take. You know, I'm not saying there weren't penalties. It's just, for it to come down to that, and we actually took some really stupid penalties. And when you watch it over, like, I mean, we made the referee call the penalties, but it just was frustrating the way it ended for us. You know, so.
You look at the character of that last day, like you say, despite all the penalties, to fight back against the Nottingham Panthers, who were overall probably the best team, one of the best teams in the best team in the league, to come from 2-0 down in their own barn, despite giving away what was a pretty fluky goal for them. It was great for the team, great for the organisation.
Yeah, it was, without winning it, it kind of capped off a pretty tough year. But, like, I mean, I was really proud of the guys, and I think it would have been ideal. It would have been a perfect finish, you know, if we'd won it in overtime, but the Panthers, I mean, we took them all the way to overtime, but that was a great team. That was, you know, probably one of the best teams that's ever been assembled. That's probably that is the best Panthers team I've ever seen. And I think Corey did a really good job of putting that group together. And, Ling made a huge difference. And Kowalski had, you know, his best year over here. So they're the team to beat, and they're the people that everyone will be chasing next year. So.
Couple of days after the playoffs finished, there was a bit of a shock that that Doug Christensen had decided to leave the Belfast Giants and move to the Sheffield Steelers. How did that pan out for you? Was it a bolt out of the blue, or did you have an inkling that this was coming?
A couple of days. It was like 12 hours.
Yeah.
Completely out of the blue. But, I mean, you can't really ever be upset about stuff like that, because it's like with players. I mean, players leave all the time, and they go places for, you know, if someone, Doug's a good coach and a team came along and offered him, you know, a lot more money than we could pay him, and he went to the, you know, he went where he thought was the best situation for him, and won't hold it against him. You know, everyone, hockey coaches and hockey players have a career span that's pretty short, and they got to go with the individual situation it looks best. I always say to guys, like, look out for number one. Don't worry about ever offending us. You know, we're used to it. And I mean, I was upset with the way it was handled,
yeah.
By Doug, by the Steelers, but you know, I don't hold it against him for going. It's financially a much better situation for him. And he you know, they talked about a bigger budget, and he wants to win more championships. And it's our job, and Nottingham's job, and the rest of the league's job to make sure that Sheffield don't win anymore.
So considering that comes as a bolt out of the blue, you know, you're obviously in your own mind, you're looking ahead to the season to come, and you've just been made aware that you have to find a new coach. What sort of procedures do you go into then? Do you have to sort of try to sit back and have a look at who's available, or do you actively go out and have you got people in your mind that you want to be in the job?
We had a couple. Like, I mean, I had a few guys in my mind that, you know, the usual suspects of who you think are, you know, yeah, for the job in Belfast. And we had a few former players and a few former coaches actually get in touch. And Paul was a little late to the party, to be honest with you. He didn't really get in touch. I think I actually got in touch with him and just said, I don't know if you're interested in this. And he said, yeah. And he thought maybe we'd sorted something out and with someone else already. And after I interviewed him, I just thought, you know, he's the man. I just don't know if anyone can match, you know, with what I think he can do for us. And I think, I mean, Paul's very different than Doug in the sense that he's a lot quieter. He's a lot more reserved. He's not going to, you know, be the media friendly, you know, fantastic quotes for the papers kind of guy. But everyone I talked to that played for him had so much respect for him, and players love playing for him. And the team presidents and the team general managers that he worked under loved working with him. And, you know, you call around and you expect to get bad reports. Some, you know, here's some of the good, some of the bad. And I really didn't hear anything bad. You know, for the guys, you know, when I asked why did he leave organizations, and it was usually over a hockey thing that he took a stand on, you know, like one of the teams he left because ownership hadn't replaced a goalie when they were in first place, and then he was frustrated because, you know, they had a chance to win the league, and it was kind of taken away from them when their starting goalie got hurt, and you know, out of principle, he didn't want to go back, and I respect that kind of thing, you know. And I think he's going to do a great job for us, and I think the players that he's lining up and have you know, the ones he signed already are a great start.
The media went into, well, the local media went into a bit of an overdrive of the names that were being thrown forward. You know, Steve Thornton was brought up again. I think Courtney was brought up at one point, and he said, you know, he didn't want part of it. Dave Whistle was very forthright in the press saying, you know, he wanted to be part of it again. Was he ever in the running, or would that have been a strange situation for yourself, having played alongside him? He brought you here to Belfast to be the general manager for a guy that you used to play for?
Yeah, it was, I mean, I'll be quite honest. I mean, I never heard from Ed. I don't think Ed would ever want to come work for me again. We didn't really click. But I mean, I talked to Thornton. I talked to Wiss. I talked to Stewie, Rob Stewart. Talked to Dave Matsos. Mike Menard had been interested. Jeremy Rebick. I mean, Jason Ruff. You know, I think that's kind of the list, but I mean, every one of them had different situations that they would have had to leave. And I mean, Wiss is coaching, you know, he's coaching young kids, like, well, 13, 14 year olds back in Canada. And I think, you know, the thing with him is I love playing for Wiss, and you know, I won 3 championships with him in 4 years. And to me, he was a great coach and a great person and a great recruiter. But I also think, you know, it's one of those things where we've, you know, going back to you know, you're not getting Dave Whistle, the UK coaching guru that had just led Belfast Giants to back-to-back titles. Yeah. You're getting, you know, Dave Whistle 10 years later, and I'm not saying he's gone down as a coach. He's probably improved as a coach, but I think the nostalgia attached to Whiss is what was drawing me to him, you know? Mm-hmm. And I had to kind of sit back and say, okay, his name wasn't Dave Whistle, would I hire him? And you know, the answer is just no. Like, just not with where he was currently coaching, or you know, he hasn't coached pro in the last, I don't know, maybe 6-7 years. And I just thought, like, you're thinking with your heart. But he was, I mean, it was down to him, and him. I mean, Whistle was probably one of the final three, and it was tough to not take him. But you know, at the end of the day, I mean, when I hired Thorts, Wiss was in the running. When I hired Doug, Wiss was in the running. Mm-hmm. And it's tough telling anyone, especially a friend like Wiss, that, you know, you're not getting the job. The same with Rob Stewart. Like, you know, there's a lot of guys that I know very well that I know I could work well with. That, and I didn't know Paul from anyone. You know, I met him for the first time when I interviewed him. And so for me, you know, you're taking a risk, but for me, it's, you know, my job is to make sure I get the guy that makes me sleep easy at night, knowing that he's got control of the team. And I think any of those guys, I mean, I think Rob Stewart, I think Dave Whistle could have done a good job, but to me, Paul currently is in the best situation. He's coming from a great league in Italy. He's done very well there. He's been coaching pro consistently for the last, you know, 10, 12 years, mm-hmm. and he's done well everywhere. And I think, you know, it's weird because you go, you know, when you look at coaches, you go to elite prospects. It's like a player, you know, with player, yeah. You go to hockey DB or you go to elite prospects. And when you go to Paul's elite prospect stage, it's missing, I think, 3 or 4 years of coaching. And I don't know why and I asked him that, you know, where were you during those interviews? I was coaching in Italy in the top league, but, and if you go to those leagues' websites, he was. And I mean, in Italy, they don't count the league, like, it's different than here. The playoff champion is considered the league champion.
Yeah.
And I think 2 or 3 years, he's finished first place in Italy. And, you know, you don't get considered as coaching a championship team. But, and they do something where they after the initial league, they kind of split it into 2 leagues, and the top 4 teams play each other, and the bottom 4 teams play each other before the playoffs. So, that's why the playoff is the big one there. But I mean, he's always consistently been a top team, you know, a coach of a top team, so he knows what it takes to win. So those are little things that, you know, not everyone would know, but spending the time with him and talking to him, he just, and little things like, you know, the coaches I interviewed, I asked him to explain the system they would use to how you beat Sheffield and how you beat Nottingham, and he just went right into it. He just said, here's what I liked from your team last year, here's what I would have done differently, here's what I think, you know, I think Doug was excellent at this, I think your system was great here, here's the things that I would change just, you know, to do this, and you know, like, you want that person that thinks it, and I mean, when I hired Doug, like, I mean, I won't ever say anything bad about Doug, and especially as a coach, he's a great coach, and I remember when I was hiring him, and it was the same when I hired Thornton, they came prepared, and they came with a plan, and sometimes people come to a job interview or get on the phone for an interview, and it's pretty generic because, you know, like, you're interviewing, I interviewed 12 or 13 coaches, and it's hard to stand out, and pretty much it's like hockey players getting interviewed for TV, they give the same responses. You know, good Lord willing, I'll just be help the team out, and I just want to be part of a good championship team. Well, coaches, you know, you get pretty much, you know, 10 of the interviews are probably all the same, and then a couple of them really stood out. And the way you can differentiate yourself is by having a plan. And like when I hired Doug, he came with a binder on players and systems on how he was going to beat Sheffield and Nottingham, and Paul, you know, came with a plan on how he would beat the other top teams in the league. You know, so. And I like that. I like someone that comes prepared and is going to eat, sleep, and breathe hockey. And you know, I'm a hockey geek. I think about it all the time, and I think of how things to get the edge on other teams. And I like that the coach is like that too. You know,
you say he's coming prepared. You know, and he's obviously, like you say, the way you're very forthright. And when he was interviewed, he's got, you know, how he's putting his systems together, what he liked from last year's teams, what he wants to put in. However, he is coming into a situation where, having been hired, he does have a lot of players already in place. That was obviously important to you to keep the ball rolling, despite the fact that you were looking for a coach, that these players had to come in, they had to be shown that the Giants were moving forward.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even anyone I interviewed, I explained, like I said, listen, I've got, you know, over the last few years, we've won a championship, we finished a point out of the first twice, and we have a good core of players, and especially with our Brits, we will lose, you know, we could potentially lose 3 or 4 Brits, which would destroy your team unless you sign right away. So, like, and then, you know, any of the guys that we signed besides that, like Mason and Sandrock and Surratt and all these guys that were on last year's teams are no-brainers to me. And you know, like, you know, some reporters have said, oh, well, Tillman signed half the team. And when I talked to Paul in the interview, we went through, like, I mean, he listed out who he would sign, and they were the same guys I would sign, you know? And maybe the only guy we didn't get that we wanted was Peacock, but he's going to Norway, to Denmark anyway.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, no bones about it. Doug was after a lot of our guys, and when you're a player, you're loyal to a team, but some players are loyal to a coach, too. And it's like Wiss. When Wiss came to Belfast years ago, I loved playing in Bracknell. I had no issues playing in Bracknell. I loved being close to London. I loved the fans. I loved the little, tiny little barn, and it was a good atmosphere. And I loved the guys I played with. But that year, they pissed around so much and didn't hire a coach. That's the only reason I left, is because, you know, like, Wiss didn't sign us all in, you know, April. We didn't sign until probably July. But Bracknell just, they didn't have a coach in place. They, you know, no one talked to us. No one, and so my worry was that I was going to miss out on signing Keith and Lloyd and Sandrock, and maybe Murph would leave because he didn't know what was happening. And so I wanted them to know that despite who the coach is, you know, I'm still here and nothing's going to change. And Murph, guys like Murph and, Murph's a perfect example, or Shieldy, they play for, you know, 3 different coaches for Belfast and they know that they know what they're getting. They know that, you know, it's Belfast that, you know, Paul Leahy is adjusting to being part of the Giants. We're not all adjusting to being part of the Paul Leahy franchise, you know? And that's important, I think.
You look at that Brit core, you look at who we've had, and it is unfortunate that Peacock's gone, but it's for the benefit of his own career to go and experience, you know, European hockey. When it comes to Giants and when they're recruiting, you said that, you know, getting Peacock from Peterborough was one of the best moves you ever made, regards to bringing in a Brit. apart from Peacock in particular, but do you think the Giants suffer from the fact that they don't have maybe direct contact with EPL, it's not ENL anymore, is it? NIHL, but these teams in the UK that you look at today, Norton's come back to the Panthers from Peterborough. The Giants don't have that direct contact with EPL teams. Do you think it makes it more difficult, especially with Paul coming in after, what, nearly 10 years of not being in the game here?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the one thing, like, I mean, I think Paul's big on developing young talent, and I think, you know, it is a disadvantage here because we can't go to the junior Giants and pick the three best players and move them into our lineup. They're not at a level yet where we can, you know, they can make that step, because it's a hell of a lot easier when you're, you know, Coventry and you have a huge junior development program and you can see all the guys on a weekly basis. We're waiting for guys. We have to basically find a guy in the league below, get him, you know, before any other team signs him. That's what we did with Peaks. Like, I remember when we signed Peacock, you know, 3-4 weeks later, I get a call from Paul Thompson going, you bastards, yeah. You guys got Peacock. We've been watching that guy all year, and we thought we'd get him, and you know what I mean. And it was just, you know, beat him to the punch. It's like with any player. And you know, for us, it's we have a good core of young guys, and as long as they don't get, you know, get to the point of silly money, we can, you know, we can build it around. Like, I mean, we took a risk a few years ago when everyone thought we were crazy signing Murphy, and look how well that's turned out. And you know, he's been a key for us, and you know, I still think Shieldsy's one of the best best British players in the league, and I mean, he's 33 now, but I mean, he's still Colin Shields at, you know, at 75 or 80% is still going to give you 25-30 goals a year and get your 60 points. You know, you're not necessarily going to get Colin Shields who got 95 points and won the league MVP from 4 years ago, but he's still a top six forward, and you know, he can play on your top two lines, he can play power play, he can play the point on the power play, he skates well, and he's got a few years left in him. You know, I don't think we're getting up there where we have four or five guys that are going to retire in the next 2 years, you know.
When it comes to losing players, how important is it to bring in maybe local players? Because, of course, this year we lost Graham Walton to retirement, but we still have, like, Gareth Roberts coming in and Deco coming in. Is it important to maybe have that local representation in the team?
Yeah, I think it's important to have locals. Like, I mean, Wally was great because there were years where he played in top 4D you know, he made GB and he contributed. You know, we don't have, I mean, so, you know, Gareth Robert isn't at Wally's level yet in the sense of what he's contributing to the team. I actually think he could. I think, you know, 2 years ago when we won the league, there was games where we had so many injuries that year that he was playing on the third line, regular shift, and he's all about confidence. He's actually quite a skilled player. It's all about confidence with him. And last year, I think we sucked a lot of confidence out of him because he just didn't get the ice time. And when they changed the rule, like, I mean, we'd already signed Toe last year, and then they changed the rule from, because we were originally supposed to have 10 imports, and then the league, I think in July, changed it to 11, and we'd already built our team for 10. And, you know, it changed things, because then Toey, you sort of had, you could bring another import in, and then Toey became your 10th import, or your 10th forward, ahead of G. And you know, it was nice to have that extra import, but I think we, had it been stuck with the 10 import rule like we'd all, you know, had agreed at the previous board meeting, hence why we built a team like that, I think it would have, we had the best, you know, we had that extra, or that 10th import, that, or sorry, the you know, with a 10 import team, yeah. And then having Toey there, it made a big difference, you know, but then as soon as Rio and Elf got to bring another import, and we sort of had two extras, you know?
Looking at, taking away from that, and looking at the organization, and I spoke to you a couple of weeks ago on text regarding the fan event that took place and the unveiling of Paul 80 and the fact that it was W5 and there were so many people there. It seems that you see there's now really enthusiastic backing from the RLC Trust. How valuable is that in the organization?
It's invaluable. It's amazing. It makes such a difference. Little things like what they talked about at that fan night, they're investing in a huge amount of money in the you know, the massive indoor screens that will take the game night experience to a new level, and they get that. They get that, you know, you have to up the product. You know, like, we've done a fantastic job with, you know, screens that were kind of crappy. You know, it was too, they weren't lit well. They, you know, we did the best we could with that situation, but yeah, you know, it still looked amateurish. And now they're saying, okay, we're going to spend this money, get two amazing screens, run game night properly, and see if we can, you know, build a game night experience that is unrivaled. And then, you know, having the support of a larger organization, you know, now it's not up to me and Mark and James to do everything. We've got administration support. We've got a better working relationship with the arena itself, because we're in the tent now, so to speak. And you know, so when we have issues with ticketing, it's not us, you know, having to get the time from the box office for them to do it, and they're so busy doing other stuff. Now it's, you know, we're part of the business. So,
yeah,
you know, and you know, things like the Arctic system that the season ticket holders are going to enjoy, which is going to be amazing. Like, it's basically, once it's loaded up, you know, automatic for our end, like, automatic payments come through that system. If all of a sudden, you know, like, the big thing for me is that if you're a season ticket holder and you can't use your ticket one game, you can actually email a friend and they can print out a temporary ticket and use your seat for that night. So no seat ever goes wasted. Little things like that, you know, you know, NHL teams have and no team in our league would have, but now all of a sudden we're going to have that. And I think maybe the lift won't, like, I mean, we had a huge lift in season tickets this year, but I think even next year people will see the benefits for that too, you know, so.
So then, saying that, with working so closely with the arena, and this week being the when you're going to the fixtures meeting for the Elite League, do you have more of more elbow room when it comes to trying to get the dates you want from the arena, or because fight in there?
It's still very similar in the sense that, you know, like, you're still down, you're still, you know, working around concerts and events
.
I mean, The Odyssey, I think we have a great working relationship with them. You know, if you could hear some of the horror stories that other teams have with their arenas, just that they never have the, you know, enough dates, or they have 9 Saturdays and, you know, 5 Fridays, and the rest they got to find for midweek, so they got to wait on dates till another month. And I am always able to go with about 20 Saturdays and 5 Fridays and maybe 1 or 2 midweek games, which is great, you know. And, you know, when I started, it was like, you know, 12 weekend dates and 15 midweek games, and it was killing us. So the Odyssey have been very understanding with over the last, you know, number of years, with understanding that they work very well with us, and they hold back dates, and they probably turn away the odd show because they know that it's vital that we have, for example, we need a playoff game at home at the end of March. We need a home opener at the beginning of September. And there's always going to be a month, usually like October or November, which there's like 3 or 4 weeks where we don't have a home game. It's happened almost every year, but that's just reality. Like, I mean, when you've got a comedy shows touring, or you've got you know, a big concert coming in that is, you know, it's still a business that they have to make money in, so they can't work it just around the Giants. But regardless of us being part of the business, I think, you know, it doesn't really change. We don't get better dates all of a sudden, but I don't think we ever have really bad dates.
And how
the last few years, at least.
When it comes to this fixtures meeting, how difficult is it? Is it a real bum fight to try to get what you want? Is it real? You know, you can't,
like,
have that date because we want that date.
It's like the scenes in the New York Stock Exchange with people running around. We had to bring a guy in to sort of keep us all in line. It's a lot of work. You don't want to get up and go to the bathroom. You'll come back and you'll be playing on, you know, a triple header in Scotland or something like that. It is difficult. Like, I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's good banter, but it's a long day. It's, you know, it's like 9 in the morning. Sometimes there's been times when we finished at 5. There's been times where we've gone till midnight, because you get sometimes to an embargo where, like, you need 2 teams to give up like a home Saturday date in order for the fixture list to move forward. And it's different. Like in the NHL, they just put out a schedule and they say, okay, you're playing these dates. Go to your arena and tell them when you're playing. But for us, you got to work. I mean, it's tough, because if every rink was like Coventry or Cardiff, where, okay, we want to play every Saturday or we want to play every Sunday, and we have that ice, then you just plug in, you know, okay, every team that wants to play on Sunday at home, every team wants to play Saturday at home. But because, like, for us in Sheffield and Nottingham, sometimes we all have the Saturday home ice at the same time, and then there's months where we don't. And So the hardest part is coordinating our games with Nottingham and Sheffield. And then once those are done, then we have to plug people in. But like, I think it's difficult when you're a smaller team to understand the difficulties of the arena teams. Everyone thinks the arena teams have it easy because they get bigger crowds. But, you know, an arena team, there's a huge difference between a Thursday and a Saturday for us. And it's making sure we get, you know, we only have a certain amount of Saturdays, which are our best dates, and making sure that we get good opponents on those days and work, you know, space it out. So you live and learn every year, and I've been lucky. I think we've done, I get the fixtures. I kind of know how to work the system. So,
well, you look at you say about the games against Nottingham and Sheffield, and you look at the season ahead, and probably in the intriguing situation we have, where you've got Doug Christensen, who knows our organisation, has been successful here for a couple of years. We've now got Paul Eddy looking at Nottingham, who where his shirt hangs from the rafters, and you've got Nottingham in a position where they're looking to hold on to the successful way that they've had it for the last season or two. It's going to be a hell of a season coming into it.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think, I mean, even, you know, there's other teams that you have to worry about as well. Like, I think last year was an eye-opener. You know, it was as exciting at the bottom end of the tables and looking at how the Gardner Conference finished up as it was in ours, and it was a dogfight right to the end. And I think, I mean, I think Cardiff's going for it as well this year, and I think Coventry are putting money into it again, and Brayhead's got Finnerty. Like, I think it's going to be the most interesting year. Like, to have Finnerty up in Brayhead is a game changer, you know, and I think the Scottish teams are all going to raise their game again. And I mean, Brayhead is a potential contender just because, you know, they have what would consider, you know, we always thought that, like, when we split into the conferences, the big worry is that Brayhead was going to walk through their conference and then win the league by a mile. And look what happened. They barely, like, I think they finished eighth, and they barely, I mean, they won their conference, but, you know, it was a mathematical elimination that they had it. Like, it, you know, they barely made the playoffs, and then they ended up winning their conference.
That's a great situation.
But anyways, I do think the conference system works. It wouldn't work with every league in Europe, but I think for us, we had to find a way to make it more equal. So.
And the final question, mate, is the fact that it's been quite a very, very eventful year, and not least right up to this point with the signings and Paul Eddy and everything that's gone before. And you yourself now have a young family. Are you going to get a chance for any sort of a break, any sort of a rest before the new season starts?
Yeah, I'm going away for work, actually, of all things.
you got to stop.
Yeah, to the States. We're going to a conference in New York in a couple of weeks, and then hopefully getting away sometime in July over the usual fortnight, the time of year that, you know, it's a good time to be in Northern Ireland, in my opinion. not for any religious reason, but just purely
because, I understand.
Because I, you know, it's, the place shuts down, so, you can't really do much business over those 2 weeks in July, so that's usually when we head away, so.
Well, it's been it's been an eventful year, and I know it's been tough at times. I know myself and every fan, I'd say, appreciates the efforts that you've put in it. And thanks for chatting to us, and we'll hopefully speak to you when the season begins.
No problem. And the only thing I wanted to say was, like, I mean, and I know it sounds so cheesy talking about it, but our fans have been tremendous this year. Like, they've, I mean, without addressing what happened, you know, like, it could have gone one of two ways, and luckily for us, it went the way it did. And if anything, our fans have responded in such a positive way over the last few months. You know, our season tickets are the highest they've ever been in the Elite League. That fan event we had at W5 was amazing. It was like, you know, it was like a rock concert when we brought everything out. And I think, you know, what people saw that night in W5 is just the start of a new era in Belfast. And you know, the fact that we can host events in W5 and have the arena catering it, and have, you know, Harp or Heineken or whoever sponsoring it, and it just raises the game to a new level. And I think that, you know, hopefully our season ticket holders see a big difference this year in the value of a season ticket. And if, you know, either way, it's just, it's you can never thank the fans enough. But this year especially, you know, I wish I could just thank them all individually, and I know they're not all listening to this, but those that are should know how much I appreciate their support and how much the team needed them this year, and how much the guys and myself talked about it, and they've just been fantastic this year. So,
well, there's exciting times ahead, mate. Thanks very much.
And thank you very much once again to Todd Kellman. Always great to chat to him. He's always really forthright with his opinions and always very honest with what he tells us here in the Views from the Bridge. And, you know, over the whole length of his time as general manager, he's been fantastic to us here in the podcast, and we're very appreciative of that. If you want to get in touch with us here on A View from the Bridge, you can drop us an email at podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com. We are on Twitter at AVFTB. That's at AVFTB. And you can go to the website www.kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast. We will hopefully be back in a couple of weeks where we'll be able to talk about all the latest signing news, see what else Paul Ailey's been up to, see what other players we've been able to bring in both here and across the league. Wherever you are, we hope you enjoy your summer. And we'll catch you here next time on A View from the Bridge.